So in order to benefit all, for the sake of all my sentient beings, equaling the limits of space, must attain the state of full enlightenment, full Buddhahood by every means. For this purpose, I shall now listen to the teachings and the sublime Dharma. So please adjust the motivation and clarify motivation in such a way as in an appropriate manner.
Yes.
So then regarding the section of teachings, we arrived at portion page 178, where it says, relying on the means of achieving happiness in the next life, even there is a section of training, going for refuge, the excellent door for entering the teaching. Yes. So then, after yesterday, we're talking about how one contemplates that after death, one achieves either of the two rebirths, either the happening a happiness or suffering rebirths, two types of beings. And then we talk about suffering in the lower realms. And today we talk about training, going for refuge, the excellent door for entering teaching. So here the refuge, if we have refuge in our mind stream, then we enter into the rank of Buddhists and we become a follower of the three jewels. And if we do not have refuge within our mind streams, then we do not enter the rank of the followers of three jewels.
Yes.
So therefore, training in this refuge, then this is the first point. And the second point is developing the faith of conviction that's the root of all temporal and certain goodness. So here the faith of conviction refers to conviction in the law of cause and effect. So if we have conviction in the law of karma, and we were to cultivate this practice, observing the law of cause and effect, then it becomes a Dharma practice. You know, our practice then becomes Dharma practice, becomes Dharma. So it is at the beginning of all Dharma practices is the practice of karma, observing the law of cause and effect. And then the result of that is the temporal happiness of rebirths in the higher realms, higher achievement, higher status, and the ultimate happiness of certain goodness is liberation and omniscient Buddhahood.
Yes.
Then the first one, going for refuge, explained in four parts. Firstly, the causes of going for refuge. Secondly, based on that, the objects to which you go for refuge. Thirdly, the way that you actually go for refuge. And fourthly, once that you've gone for refuge, the stages of precepts to be cultivated. So then when we firstly, when one go for refuge, there are generally many causes for going for refuge. As mentioned here in the text, there is a refuge corresponding to the mental capacity of the being, of the smaller capable being, and those according to the capacity of the being of the middling capable being, and those according to the capacity of the being of the greatest capable being. So therefore, there are the different, there are many causes for going for refuge. However, here this particular refuge, the title for this section is called Training Going for Refuge, the excellent door for entering the teaching. Therefore, here what is being expounded here is the refuge is common with the trainings of the path corresponding to the smaller capable being, the lesser capable being. So in general, what we contemplate, the reason for going for refuge in this section is because of understanding that we cannot remain eternally in this world due to the recollection of death and impermanence, and then understanding that after death, you know, we do not decide where we are born, but rather it is our karma that causes us to be born. It is the karma that decides, you know, which of the two states, either of happiness or misery, that we are born into. So therefore, understanding the law of cause and effect, and also understanding that our positive karma, the virtues that we have created while we are alive, you know, are extremely little, very few, and also very weak. And the negative karma they have created are many. The non-virtues we've engaged in them are many, and also very extremely strong. So in order to express that, the Nama Tsongkhapa quotes from Shantideva's Engaging the Bodhisattvas, which says that just as a flash of lightning in the dark cloud momentarily illuminates the darkness of a black night. So here, the darkness, you know, is an analogy of the sins and non-virtue that we are constantly engaged in. So it's almost like a eternal dark night, you know, that envelops us. Then also mentions about the lightning, flash of lightning in the darkness. Once in a while, this like this flash of lightning lights up the darkness of the night sky. So here, due to the power of the Buddha, then once in a while, you know, we are able to generate generate a virtuous mind and engage in practice virtue. So in general, understanding this, then also understanding this due to this analogy that all the virtue, most of the virtue we create are extremely weak, and the non-virtue that we engage in is fiercely powerful. So therefore, generating the mind and understanding that, you know, how this such heavy negative karma would cause us to readily fall into the lower realms at any point of time. So generating the fear and dread in one's mind, and then having such fear and dread in one's mind, then one seeks a source of refuge. You know? So therefore, having the cause here, which is the fear and dread, you know, of rebirth in the lower realms and going for refuge to three jewels. And also, not only having the fear as one of the causes, but also understanding that the object that one goes to refuge for, which is the three jewels, that they possess the, having the faith and conviction that they possess the power to be able to protect us from falling into the lower realms. So having that faith of conviction in the three jewels. So here, essentially, having these two causes for refuge, fear as well as faith. Yes.
Mm-hmm. Tena, tenyi chetong de song, jamblong tetong dada. Tenyi, shogan, temba chiona, jamblong yikuwa chi hombi, juni lambe ba chia hos. The tendene, yikuwa tang, tebani mo de shogu jayoina, a de chombe, jamblong, the shogu, yin kunghe shiba, a jingles. Tenyi, sem deni mevachi, chetong de song baina.
So here in general, having the causes for going for refuge is fear and dread towards rebirth in the lower realms, and also faith towards the three jewels. If both these factors are powerful, if one has strong fear of the lower realms, you know, suffering in the lower realms, as well as strong faith towards the three jewels, then one's practice of refuge, you know, becomes extremely powerful. You know, if these two factors are very strong in our mind streams, then the actual refuge, resulting refuge, the result of take going for refuge, and you know, becomes extremely powerful. So if one, however, if one does not actually have these causes, you know, strongly embedded in our minds, or these factors are not so powerful, then our refuge should be just mere, you know, limited to just mere verbal repetition, you know, of refuge prayers, and then it does not become very strong or powerful for transforming our minds. So here, the analogy given is for a person who has broken, committed a serious offense, you know, broken the law, and then this person, you know, would truly, having understood the seriousness, you know, of such a offense, then generates great fear towards this, towards such an act, the results that would come forth from, you know, for such an act, and then they constantly search
punishment.
Okay, they're afraid of punishment. Then they search for a means for protecting them from protecting themselves from suffering, then looking for the means for protection, then they'll look for someone to be able to protect them, and then therefore they will look for someone that they would knowingly, that they know this person has the ability, they have to have the understanding or knowledge of this person as truly having the ability to protect them. And then having found such a person that they can trust, then they would entrust themselves entirely from the depth of their heart, you know, to that person to be able to protect them. So on the contrary, on the other hand, if you having found somebody who can protect you, but yet in your mind, you know, you still have doubts, you know, thinking, oh, basically this person is going to help me, but then you are not really sure whether this person has the ability or not. So you're not entrusting, you know, from the bottom of your heart. So then, you know, not necessarily, since lack of confidence may not necessarily work. So in this case, then you need to have faith in the three jewels to understand, having understood that the three jewels have such power to protect us from the lower realms, and then having the strong conviction of faith of conviction from the depth of one's heart, and to not, having understood this, makes a strong faith and conviction in one's heart, then one's practice of refuge becomes extremely powerful. Yes. Then following that, based on such causes of refuge, then the following sections explain about the objects to which you go for refuge. And this is divided into two sections. Firstly, identifying the objects to which you go for refuge, and secondly, the reasons why they're worthy to be a refuge. Yes.
Mm. famous.
He served us and became famous.
It's a praise that by
alternative. So then we have this the praise. There's a praise here, the praise in 150 verses, which is like a composed by the master Lobun Bawa in praise of the Bhagavan Buddha. So it is also interlaced with sayings not only of Lobun Bawa but also with the quotation above here, Dignaga, Mahatma Dignaga. So here, so these are interlaced together, and then here in the form of question and answer, so here you have the answer. The question was the section on the bottom, page 178, and then the page top, page 179. There is the answer. So here, in praise of the Bhagavan Buddha, then the Lobun Bawa mentioned that the one in whom no fault can ever exist, the one in whom all good qualities exist. Here, praising the quality of the Bhagavan Buddha, that all the Buddha is without any fault, has eradicated all faults, and then has his faultless, and the Buddha has completed all trainings in all the qualities, and therefore perfect in all qualities. And then so if one is sensible, if one is intelligent, and therefore one would go for refuge to such a person, and to also always praise and honor such a being, and to abide within the teaching of such a being. So since this is an answer, then the question is on the bottom of page 178, whereby Dignaga, the great philosopher Dignaga, said, as a question, adrift in the bottomless ocean of cyclic existence, devoured by fierce sea monsters, attachment and delight, to whom should I go for refuge? So here, the bottomless ocean of cyclic existence is an analogy. A bottomless ocean is an analogy for a cyclic existence, bottomless and pits, and also seemingly endless, you know, in terms of the vastness of the ocean of cyclic existence. And having fallen into such an ocean, one is being constantly devoured by the various fierce sea monsters. And here, you know, these are fierce sea monsters analogies of the various afflictive emotions, such as attachment and the like. And due to the influence of such afflictive emotions, then one creates different negative karmas and experiences the results of suffering. One experiences the various sufferings, and in this way, then he says here, to whom should I go for refuge? So here this is posed in the form of a question, and the answer to that is on the top of page 179.
Yes.
So, as I mentioned before, that this praise in 150 verses is called such because there are 150 verses in that praise. So, then here it says that in the text that is here he refers to going for refuge to the Bhagavan Buddha, the true refuge, but also one can understand the citation to refer also to the three jewels, the Buddha jewel, the Dharma jewel, and the Sangha jewel. Even though it expressly refers to the going for refuge to the Buddha jewel, however, one can understand it in the same context regarding to the other two jewels of the Dharma and the Sangha.
Then, 구나 투지 뭐 내려면 반주봐 팬다마다 탐지제 통제봐 근데 성공이요 그래서
So here the four reasons mentioned at the bottom of page 179 is that the four reasons why one goes for refuge to the Buddha. First, the first reason is that the Buddha has freed himself from his own fears. Then the second reason is that the Buddha is skilled in freeing others, you know, from their own fears. And the third reason is that due to the mind of loving kindness and compassion, the Buddha has no sense of discrimination amongst his disciples. And then the fourth reason is that he benefits all beings again without discrimination as to whether the beings have benefited him or not.
Yes. Mm-hmm. 숨바래. 내가 간절해서 나 인간 나 남게 놓나 추든 게 이제 이나. 근데 대 남놓 추든 가지 야동 두고만 봐. 근데 대동비나 그런 인자 마 남놓 수치로 마 템로야 마도 동투야 마요. 다 남에서 깜보는 대장 게 이제 야동비나 동투비야로. 대놓이 Roni njikwate le chowa jikwaare. Roni njikwate jie jendu, jien njikwate chortoku maare, somaare.
So the first, explaining further on, the first reason why the Buddha is free from, one needs to go for object refuge, that is free from all fears. So analogy is given if one is caught in quicksand, then one is unable to save others who are similarly caught in quicksand, and, you know, sinking in the quagmire of mud, you know, quicksand. So in this case, if both are similarly caught in a similar situation of fear, and the one is unable to free another, you know, from that situation, trap situation. So only a person who is outside of the quicksand, let's say on the banks, you know, of such a quagmire of mud, you know, only are they able to pull that person out from the quicksand. So therefore, the Buddha, in order to protect us from fear, has to be free from all fears himself in the first place. Then the second quality is that the object of refuge must be skilled in the means of freeing others from their fears. So, for example, if one is free from suffering, not only does one need to be free, the object of refuge needs to be free from suffering itself, it also needs to be skilled in the ways of freeing others from suffering. Otherwise, if they're not skilled, then they will not be able to save others, you know, from their suffering. Yeah, free. Free from fear. Okay, free from fear. So one that needs to be able to, then one is able to free others from fear. So in this case, if one is, for example, if one a person has freed themselves, has removed themselves from the quicksand, then but if they are willing to, but this person has no hands, no limbs. To pull the others who are trapped in the quicksand out of that situation. So in that case, then they will not have the ability to free them from that fear of the quicksand. So in this case, one needs to have the capability or the skill in the means of freeing others from fear.
The daughter is drowned in the river. The mother is armless. So even the daughter side, you know, was drowned and has a wish to be free from to be saved, but that doesn't help the mother who guides has to have arm to grab it.
Yes.
So that if not.
Okay. So if a child has fallen into a river and then does not, and then the mother who is on the riverbanks want even as much desire as she wishes to free the child from take the child out of the river, but if the mother has no arms and no hands, then she does not have the ability as much as she wishes to pull the child out of the river. Can someone open the doors? It's very stuffy in here. Please.
Yes.
So in the case of the Anguillimala who was a person in the time of the Buddha, then having relied on the wrong teacher, then he was told to kill 1,000 people to attain liberation and to string up their fingers, a finger taken from each of the person that he killed, and to string them in the form of a rosary, and then having achieved that, then he would be able to achieve liberation. Then having killed 999 people, then there was one person left to be killed, and then he had run out of people to kill and almost killed his own mother. Then the Buddha, through his miraculous powers, then manifested in the form of an ordinary fully ordained monk, manifested in the aspect of a fully ordained monk, then went forth, to guide Angulimala, by showing miraculous powers and so forth, and slowly led him to the path of Dharma, and eventually led him to attain the Sayo Arhatship. Yes. Through skillful means. Led him through skillful means in such a way. Yes. Yes. So then, in terms of the Buddha being free from fears himself, then it is said that the Buddha is free from the four types of fears. The first freedom is that the Buddha can say that he has freed himself of all the faults of cyclic existence within cyclic existence, and he has realized all the dharmas. Therefore, no one is able to say that the Buddha has yet to abandon such fault, and the Buddha has yet to realize or accomplish such a dharma or teaching. So therefore, the Buddha, in terms of his own achievements, then is free from these two fears. And also then the Buddha is able to teach others what is to be abandoned, you know, that in terms of achieving liberation, you need to abandon such faults. And you also, this is a fault, this is a fault, an object of abandonment, you know, then you need to abandon this. And when the Buddha is able to teach that clearly, also the Buddha is able to say, to teach the disciples that such, you know, this such and such phenomena is the path, is an object of meditation. You should take this up and meditate upon it. So in this manner, you know, then the Buddha is no one can say that the Buddha is unable to point out. The Buddha has not pointed out such an object of abandonment. He has left out such an object of abandonment, or the Buddha, you know, has left out such a teaching such a path of meditation. So therefore, the Buddha is free from these two fears. So therefore, the Buddha is said to be free from all these four fears. In the case of when we're talking about himself being free from his own fears. So in this case, then the third quality of the Buddha, the object of refuge, is that the Buddha has great compassion, and this compassion refers to having not having the discrimination between those who are close to him and those that are distant, no sense of discrimination. So it is said that the Buddha, if the Buddha does not have such a form of compassion, then the Buddha will work only to benefit or to accomplish the aims of those that are close to him and not accomplish the aims of others. So in this case, this is not a case. Since we said that the Buddha has great compassion, so therefore to the Buddha there's no sense of closeness or distance, you know, in regards to other sentient beings. And the Buddha himself has said that there is no difference for him between his own child, Rahula, who was ordained, you know, into the Sangha, his own child as well, and also the difference between that and his enemy, Devadatta, his cousin Devadatta, who had tried to kill him by throwing rocks at him from a distance, and also also causing dissension in this Sangha community and so forth. So the Buddha had said that he had complete no sense of discrimination, no sense of difference between his own child and his enemy. So one time, then Devadatta, due to his evil deeds, you know, had fallen sick, and then the Buddha went forth and healed him by pronouncing the truth of such equality, of lack of discrimination, by saying that, you know, because there's no, in my heart there's no difference between my child Rahula and my enemy Devadatta. My compassion is equal to both of them, you know, and by the truth of these words, may Devadatta may be healed. So that he put his hand upon Devadatta's head, and by pronouncing these words of truth, Devadatta was indeed healed of his sicknesses.
Yes. So yabu che jong se ne pa yabu che ya. So ne pe ma da ge dende la da yu shu se. So ke che me se ya sa ma yu ting bi lo tong dende ro. Ne son je jim nende dende me ma. Pe da ma da tam je je tong se ba. Tu je jim u gu na nye re me ba jodi yu a yin du. ten dama dala sikha maya re. Yindu ten yawa ni, san zingin chubi ni, minye jis, drivin chubi ni gwa chikulis, loma dawa yina yon, san zingin chubi bunghe tenla nivu maya. Drivin chubi jingin tenla nivu. Tenla jingin dala ten dama dala tamji ji tongze ba se yata chong yon kiwa re.
So here, then the fourth quality here is that the Buddha is an worthy object of refuge because he is not pleased. He has no discriminations against those that have been beneficial to him and those who have not. So in general, from the worldly point of view, those people that have benefited us, then we have a sense of gratitude and we hold them close and dear to our heart to readily respond to their needs. However, those that have not been of any direct benefit to us, then, you know, we keep a distance and we remain cold, turn a cold shoulder towards them. So, however, for the point of the Buddha, then there's no difference whether someone has made material offerings to him or not. Whether one has benefited Buddha or not, his compassion is equal and there's no discrimination in that sense. So, and also in the teachings, it is said that the true spiritual master, is not pleased by material offerings, but is pleased by practice, you know, by the offering of one's own practice. So therefore, here, by referring to the quality of the Buddha as being such, you know, it is also has a connotation of referring to the teachings regarding the qualities of the spiritual master.
Yes. じゃあ、そうやめばれ。え、ランニングにこだわるわせや、手をつんやめばれ。で、だ、あ、顔を中心もせやだ。あ、チャムジュ。え、サンバ、シルビーってそうでちゃってるわ。で、てじね、ニョムビジモンの中継、ちょうてやれ。え、それだ、うん、どちゃちんをんちゅ。あ。で、ね、せどんじゃチャムジュ。あ、でもじゃサンバせ。え、てね、え、もうでちょうてやれ。てね、ルーションに ジュガでジョヤセヤテメオリ。ロニジュガでジョメアインドゥ、ジェンジュガでジョヤ、タブ、テビシマラ。ロニジュガ。で、このトゥジムニャルムジュガセヤテヨン、メ、ペンダマダ、ムジトンゼワセヤテヨン、ヨングマジティンベ。インドゥヨネ、オンジュソーダメラス。ダオンチュソーティー、ソンベ、ダカジェヨニ、チュダ、シェンダ。
So then in the text it further says that such qualities are only endowed or can be found in the Buddha and not found in the other worldly gods, you know, such as Shiva, Brahma, Vishnu, and so forth. All these are top worldly gods, and even though they have such high status, they do not possess these qualities. So, for example, the first quality of being free from one's own, being oneself free from all fears, then this quality is endowed only in the Buddha. You know, the other worldly gods such as Shiva and so forth, all these are gods who are still under the control of their delusions, being under the control of affective emotions. So it is said that the Shiva is like under the influence of desire, and Vishnu is under influence of anger, and Brahma is under the influence of ignorance. So therefore, being under the influence of such affective emotions, they are not free from their own fears. And so since they are not free of their own fears, you know, they will not have the skillful means to free others from fear as well. Then that's the lacking the second quality. Then third quality, having great compassion, which they do not have. Then also they also lack in the fourth quality of not discriminating against those who have not made offerings to them and material offerings to them, and siding with those who have made material offerings to them. So being free of discrimination. So here in the text it refers to the divine creator, so on. So Rinpoche mentioned like Maheshwara, which is Shiva, etc. These worldly gods do not have such qualities. So even though in worldly practice there are a lot of worldly people, they go for refuge to such gods of nature, such as the deities, the worldly gods residing in the water residing in trees and mountains and so forth. However, these gods, since they themselves do not possess these four qualities, therefore they are not worthy objects of refuge, and they cannot protect us from fear.
Yes.
So therefore, having become a Buddhist, then it is not appropriate to go for refuge from the depth of one's being or the depth of one's heart. It requires to seek their cooperation or their assistance in certain worldly affairs, you know, to give them some gifts, give them some gifts in the form of certain kinds of offerings, and then to request them to assist oneself or to cooperate in bringing out success of some matters. However, other than that, you know, it is not, so does not, by doing that in that way, as long as one's, in one's mind, one does not go for refuge from the depth of one's heart, you know, then there's no contradiction to that. So, however, if one goes for refuge from the depth of one's heart when seeking assistance from these deities, then one, this contradicts one's precepts of refuge practice. And also on occasion, sometimes even the deities would, these worldly gods, you know, will harm us in return for all, in return to our prayers, you know, instead of helping us, sometimes they will harm us.
Yes.
So if one goes for refuge to these worldly deities from the depth of one's heart, sometimes one will receive harm from these worldly deities.
At the beginning, this world, there was a God. They, if you, with the whole heart, if you rely on them, the danger is that they will protect you at the beginning. But then the other beings who harm you, they are more powerful than this world devil that you. That you rely upon from the heart, you know, say, you say, from the bottom of your heart, you rely upon the world, that world, whatever. So, in that case, when the world, cannot protect you. Because the other being who harm you are more powerful, then what they do is then they kill you. Then the world that they kill you, and then after that, then you get born as the entourage, those are pressure beings, entourage. Also, these world devils, they get something to eat or something from you after they kill you. So it's, so how can that you can't really. You know, from bottom of your heart, can't really trust holding your life to those world devils. those who are not, who don't have complete power as the Tibetan. So.
So there's a
like you can say you can ask them for help, temporary things like of an incense or something, things like that, so forth. But can't really with your whole heart can't really rely on them. Then like that, so many other stories that they trusted this world of devas and but. It will receive a lot of harm from them.
So there are instances where by going for refuge from death of one's heart to the worldly deities, then one receives harm in return instead of benefit. So in the past, there used to be this one cliff, you know, a place in Tibet, one cliff that was known to have many spirits abiding there. So there was one herder of animals. One day he was herding animals in the vicinity, and one of his unheard animals was missing. And in part of searching for it, then it became very late in the day and was unable to return. The sky grew dark and was unable to return to the camp. And so it became very dark. Then he slept by the cliff in the cave in the cave in the cliff. So then by nighttime, that the place became inhabited with ghosts. You know, then the spirits came and sort of gathered in the place. Then they sort of like wanted to flesh. So Shari Chazen is the name of the deva. So anyway, this guy, the spirit resides in the region. Shari Chazen. So, and then so the spirits had gathered together and was distributing flesh for consumption to various people they had killed. Then there was a piece of flesh that was insufficient. You know, a piece of flesh that was missing. So then this person was sleeping there.
So one spirit, I think the share is missing. That spirit share is missing. There's not enough meat.
So there was one spirit's share of meat was missing. Then they saw this person who was sleeping in the cave. And said that person had a goiter, a lump growing on his neck. And so they said, why don't you just take that lump, you know, for consumption, that goiter for consumption. So then of course, when the person next day when he woke up, then his goiter was gone. So then he went back into where he came from, his camp, his community. So another person with goiter wanted to know that saw that his goiter was gone. You know, this person's goiter gone. Then he was very surprised and asked him where he went for healing. So this person said, "Oh, I was sleeping in this cave last night and I was healed of my goiter." So then of course this person, the second person with the goiter is great.
What did you do?
What do you do to get rid of the goiter? So said, "I just slept at this place and the cliff, you know, and then I was healed of my goiter." So the second person with devotion then went for refuge, with the mind of going for refuge, you know, went to this place. To rely on that place, you know, to heal his goiter and slept there. However, then again that night, again the spirits gathered together.
To rely on the spirits.
So the mind of going for refuge and relying on the spirits, then he went to this cave, and the next day, that very night, then the spirits again gathered together. And then the spirits who had received the goiter from the last night, then replied saying that, you know, the goiter I received last night was not sumptuous, not delicious. So, and that guy's just sleeping there by the side. Maybe just put it back on to him. So the guy who went for refuge, the spirit, woke up the next day having two goiters. He had an additional goiter for the previous night. So this is an instance of how you can be harmed by going for refuge to woolly beings, woolly gods.
If you trust him from the heart.
You can trust such worldly gods from the depths of their hearts. So therefore, understanding that these worldly deities are not worthy objects of refuge, you know, such qualities such as being free from the four fears, and that with the four qualities that makes one a worthy refuge, as mentioned before, then such qualities only the Buddha is endowed with such qualities. Other worldly gods such as Maheshwara and Shiva and so forth are not endowed with such qualities. So therefore, then understanding the Buddha being free from the four fears, endowed with such four qualities, he becomes a worthy object of refuge. And also the teaching that he expounds, teaching the true truth, you know, the truth of cessation and the true path, the true cessation and the true path. These two truths, which are the essence of his teachings, these are the also become worthy objects of refuge. And also his community, which is the Sangha, then also becomes a worthy object of refuge. So here the teaching refers to makes a reference to three jewels as worthy objects of refuge.
Yes.
So therefore, understanding that the worldly deities are not worthy objects of refuge.
rong dunga le choba thela yunyi tsongko kiwa res. Chi jen reta rongin jiwa tada roba la soba tende ke jiawsu uchu je tende sunje chumde dina tsongi kiwa res. Chi jen jo. Da nongi jen kargo rse na ini reta le jubi nubayi ba yi chi bi gwane ini retin chawa te go kiwa res. Eta nga zo sunje chumde dine Chi Jujian Kanga Drop Sema Rete Nonge Pa Reti Chawa De Majo Yisa De Le De Akwa Yindu Yini Rongge Reta De Jubi Nipa Yipa Yijibi Kondi Reti Chawa Chwa Yina Chi Jini Kanga Tsong Nonge Jini Tsong Yisa Da Jujian Tsong Yindu 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 Yipa Chubi Yungi Rwa Yindu Mi Chupa Mi Siva Re Song
So like this, understanding the Buddha has all these four characteristics that are define a worthy object of refuge. So understanding the Buddha and the three jewels have such qualities, then one goes for refuge. Having achieved certainty or conviction in one's mind regarding such qualities of the Buddha, then one should entrust wholeheartedly with a single-pointed focus in one's mind. One should entrust oneself wholeheartedly through the three jewels. If one does so, then it's not possible that the three jewels will not protect us. And the reason for that is that in order to free ourselves from fear, two reasons or two factors are required. The external factor of the Buddha. In this case, the teacher Buddha has freed himself from all fears. And the second, which is the inner condition, entrusting wholeheartedly entrusting oneself wholeheartedly to the object of refuge. So in this case, in our situation, do you have the external factor, which is the Buddha, whereby all the Buddha has already accomplished, completed his accomplishment of freedom from all fears. However, our internal condition, internal factor of the mind of faithful entrustment, having faith in the qualities of the Buddha and total entrustment from the depths of our hearts to this object of refuge. This factor is lacking. Therefore, we do not accomplish that. So therefore, when these two factors and conditions, causes and conditions, these two factors are complete, therefore, then bear the results of the refuge practice.
Mm-hmm. 님말에 다 네 손재점내 네 파 잡주네 레드자와 있나 존재바 마세 마주가 있나요 이제 지금 돈에 존재바 된데 요래 선발에 다 뭐만에 손재 이제는 표대 가운데 잠시 지금 모두 가서 해야지다 좀 바로 네 잠시 지금 모두 가서네 코나 다 모두 그때 뭐 총대요지 다 근데 그러면 모두가 때 총대 요인자 매질 되면은 이제 봐 주의진 몇몇서 신나서 된들 주의진 되잖아요지 그런 말 근데 좀 된데 다 여자들이 탐을 개봐다 아 돈 이제 좀 좋네 된 두비체도 또 저 잡주님도 양말아 된 반 두비체도 코네용 노미에서 된지 주바주 이제 매연의 고출로 그래. 근데 대 코로나 동에서 된지 주의시네. 앞에 근데 코로나도 주의 그노. 제대로 그 가다죠. 바로 관계에서 그래. 근데 저런 주고 말에 소셔서. 근데 좀 된데 고사 밥에 핸디 걸어 보자. 근데 가게 가서 주 손전에 핸디 동자 받좀 버리. 근데 마저요 두지 좀 전에 동자 봐서 핸디 용요.
So also the Bhagavan Buddha, it is said that not only does the Bhagavan Buddha protect and benefit us when we seek refuge to the Buddha, when we generate hope and trust ourselves to the Buddha, but also when one does not have such hope or entrust oneself, then the Buddha is said, due to the power of great compassion, the Buddha is said to benefit others, irregardless of whether they actually entrust themselves to him for refuge. Go for refuge to him or not, because due to the power of great compassion, he benefits even those who do not entrust themselves to him. So it is at a time when the Buddha was abiding, the teacher Buddha was abiding in this world, that the great there was a great Brahmin called Midupa, which means the ugly one, unpleasant one. He was born in such unpleasant physical appearance that he was unable to. He had great shame and embarrassment and was unable to remain amongst the ordinary people. So due to his great shame, he escaped amidst the forest and lived in the forest. Then the Buddha, who was skilled in the methods for taming the disciples, then even though the Brahmin did not seek refuge in the Buddha, then the Buddha, due to the power of his great compassion, then manifested in the form that was even uglier, you know, more hideous in appearance than this Brahmin, and then went forth into the forest. So normally when the Brahmin saw people approaching, then he would escape or flee, you know, to hide himself in order to, you know, due to his great shame and embarrassment. However, now he saw someone approaching who was even more hideous looking than he was. Then he was extremely happy, extremely pleased. And then, therefore, this manifestation...
At the beginning, the Buddha's manifestation was much more ugly. He started by seeing the other Brahmin who was very ugly. He just ran away at the beginning.
Who's beginning right away?
The Buddha's manifestation had at the same, you know, I mean, even more ugly than the other Brahmin, then it began to start running away by seeing the other Brahmin start running away. Like how the other one used to do.
Okay, so the reverse roles this time. And then, so the manifestation of Buddha then did exactly what the Brahmin used to do when he saw other people approaching. Then the manifestation of Buddha tried, sort of like saw the Brahmin and then ran away. You know, because he was uglier, that manifestation was uglier in appearance, more hideous in appearance. And so then the Brahmin then...
More ugly than the Brahmin.
So the ugly Brahmin then told him that manifestation, you know, no need to fear, you know, come close to me. So then he was very happy to find such a companion, and they became good friends, acquaintances. Then over time, then this manifestation of Buddha taught him Dharma, taught this Brahmin Dharma, and hence rendered the life of the Brahmin to come to possess great meaning, become meaningful. So in this way, then the Buddha, you know, is said to benefit those who do not seek refuge in him. So then the Buddha is said to also, when the Buddha at all times, you know, is sort of like seeking out the disciples, whether disciples are ready or ripen to be tamed. And there's no one time where the Buddha does not tame disciples when it is the right time. So unlike some other beings, you know, when it's time to benefit others, a suitable time to benefit the disciples when they're ripened, then due to the force of laziness, you know, then they do not go ahead immediately. So it is said that the Buddha, throughout six times of the day, you know, are always constantly observing sentient beings, seeing who is ripened and who isn't, and who is suitable to be established on the path of liberation, or who is the perfect vessel, a ripened vessel, to be established, for teachings to be established in the path to omniscience. So whether the sentient beings, you know, who are the objects to be tamed, then whether at what point of time, you know, are they ready to be ready for such teachings, so-called a ripened or a suitable vessel. So when that the ripening occurs, that very instant when they become a suitable vessel, worthy vessel for teachings, then the Buddha's enlightened activities effortlessly, spontaneously manifest, you know, in order to benefit those beings. So in this case, then it is said that the Buddha, due to this, he's not lazy and he's the unrivaled and auspicious refuge.
Yes.
So then the verses at the bottom of page 180, these basically repeat the same qualities as mentioned above. Then regarding going for refuge, then the third section in training for going for refuge is the actual way of going for refuge. Then the here explains the four aspects for going for refuge in accordance with Devanaya. Then the first one is by knowing the good qualities of the object of refuge. Secondly, by knowing the distinctions. Thirdly, through commitment. And fourthly, by refusing to acknowledge other refuges. Of these, the first one is going for refuge by knowing the good qualities. And so, in this section, one requires recalling the recollection of the good qualities of the objects of refuge. Then this has three subdivisions. The good qualities of the Buddha, firstly. And secondly, the good qualities of teaching the Dharma. And thirdly, the good qualities of the community, the Sangha.
Yes.
Then the first one, the good qualities of the Buddha, again is explained in four parts. The qualities of the holy body, qualities of holy speech, qualities of the holy mind, and qualities of the enlightened activities. Recollecting the qualities of the Buddha's body, then it is said that the founder, the teacher and founder, Bhagavan Buddha, has physical attributes that are not possessed by other beings. The physical attributes such as the 32 major marks and the 80 minor exemplifications. So then the 32 major marks such as the crown protrusion at the top of the Buddha's head, there is a crown protrusion, and also the brow curl, which is a hair that's curled to the right, emits the middle of the Buddha's eyebrows, and instead of when you pull this hair, it is a very long distance, and when you let go, it sort of springs back and curls naturally in the clockwise direction. So this is called a brow curl. And also there are marks of Dharma wheels on the hands and the feet of the Buddha, and the shape, resemblance of golden Dharma wheels. And when you look at these wheels, they look as if they are protruding, they're protruding from the surface of the Buddha's hands and feet. But when you actually touch the Buddha's hands and feet, then they're actually flat. One does not feel the protrusion, but by looking from a distance, it looks as if it has a 3D dimension to it. It feels as if it is a three-dimensional look, as if it is protruding from the Buddha's hands and feet. So the Buddha has such 32 major marks. Then the 32 major marks or signs, then these are to show that to demonstrate the Buddha as a superior being, that is to differentiate the Buddha as a being that is more superior and noble than other persons or beings. Then the 80 exemplifications are sort of like to in order to incite respect, I think, to Shengi. Pishiki Juti, Tanda Karina,
Kongi, Yon Dente, Shena Kovarchi, Beto.
Shengi Kovarchi. So, they're sort of like examples for others to understand the qualities, come to understanding of the qualities of the Buddha. So therefore, this is like an analogy of the Lord and the entourage. So then the 32 major marks are like the Lord itself and the entourage. The 80 minor exemplifications are like the entourage. Yes.
So
in the here Lama Tsongkhapa recalls the qualities of the Buddha's body by quoting the praise of example. So here in extremely attractive and beautiful, and on top of that, it's marked with this 32 major marks and 80 minor exemplifications. Therefore, it makes it even more appealing, more beautiful. Yes. So then, in this case, then also the Buddha's holy body is said to be golden in color, and then being wrapped, the Buddha also uses the religious robes of maroon or orange colored robes. So in this case, extremely beautiful sight to perceive, likened to a golden mountain peak wrapped in the clouds of sunrise when the sun is about to rise or about to set.
Then
Then also the next verse talks about the Buddha. Since the Buddha is monastic, then therefore it does not partake of different jewels. You know, doesn't wear different jewelry ornaments to adorn his physical appearance. However, even then, the Buddha's physical face, his actual facial looks are so clear and beautiful that it is said even the full moon is free of clouds and it cannot be compared to such appealing appearance of the Buddha's face.
Yes. In the shade, the penis of the corner mapochi. A tether, a permanent car setting a perma mapochi. Pumin horn in the corner. In the perma carry in us on the Tesson Sagoya, tender again,
the next verse praises the Buddha's face, you know, which has a reddish tinge to it, similar to a lotus. So then, even if, when this an actual red lotus flower were to bloom open, in the sun, in the rising sun, then if a bee was to come chance upon the situation, then even the bee would doubt as to which was the real lotus.
And then it's some carbo, Rita Sherry Savoche, DJ that some carbo, Sergi Re Sebla, and Davashu Division, and Davios Sharing Bison, and then those.
So then the next verse praises the the beauty of the beauty of the Buddha's face would make the bee doubt whether which was the real lotus one could.
The like lotus. The polymath is red. not the whole face red.
So then,
like lotus is a poetic way expressed. The lotus opened by the sun. the lotus opened by sun, and then the bee sees that, then get in trying to doubt. So means that you know, so beautiful. Say the use an example as poetry. so beautiful that wonders how you know, so how this is.
So I think it's because the word shell here is mentioned in Tibetan and is an honorific term for the mouth as well. So it can also mean the face of face, honorific term for face and also honorific term for mouth. So then the next verse here mentions about the teeth of the Buddha. Then the Buddha's since the Buddha's face is golden in color, then the teeth are said to be very straight and extremely white. And there are like 40 teeth in the mouth of the Buddha. So therefore, by looking at the teeth of the Buddha, it's almost like the beams of the moon, the moon beams shining through rows of the gaps between golden mountains, shining through the golden mountains. So it has that kind of appearance.
Yes. 사자분체는 콜로요다지. 사자분체는 콜로요다인데, 뒤에 가는 송이 요새나, 고위 짭임에, 고아등의 송이 동안에 짜등임에, 듣지라, 지나선 제국 말에 짭고 요새는 우침에 쏟아고 두고.
So then the Buddha's hands, you know, then adorned with the signs of the golden wheels. So then the Buddha makes the mudra or the gesture of clarifying or relieving beings who are caught, trapped in the suffering of cyclic existence, caught in the fears of cyclic existence, saying that they do not need to fear, and for the Buddha is able to protect them from such fears, so thereby giving relief to these beings.
Holy hand, the Buddha's body adorned with the wheel, Dhamma, so that giving breath, you know, it was the freedom. to the samsara beings.
Topju shikwa chubhisi shamni paji pemandi sajini nirijibu pemandi ni chidanzi shiyesumbada tenpa chao. Ta sanje jom nende pewe kabla ta shab sala rikeyo mare. Shab sala mare wu pegi yorede ina shab ji tanda kodu ji teso saji gona ta rimo sivu nene wu yore. Inda tenpe jene Pewe kawla saji la rimo tri yawa te yin zibu shibu yin to yin meto pemi tsar taba pemi saji zibat te da chumne nenge shab ki ji ge kodu rimo da tende yawa te ache yin tenye che na yin chumne nenge te chepa din papa re yes.
So therefore the when the Buddha is moving are walking on the earth, and then the Buddha's feet are said to not touch the actual ground. The Buddha's feet does not touch the ground. However, then when the Buddha is walking, even though his feet does not touch the ground, the wheels, the Dharma wheels that are appearing, that appear at the soles of the Buddha's feet, are said to be naturally imprinted clearly on the ground wherever the Buddha has passed by. So therefore, then these wheels of the these signs, this images of the Dharma wheel that appear on the ground are said to be so intricate and beautiful that they are even more beautiful than the splendid lotuses. Therefore, it says here, how can it be beautified lotus gardens? Even the splendid open lotuses in full bloom, like their beauty cannot be compared with the beauty of the Dharma wheels that are left imprinted clearly on the ground where the Buddha has walked upon. Yes.
Mm-hmm. Ta pewe kawna shabwa sala mara wachi. Namaza chowe kawna namaza kuzhu dhupa manja wachi. Sori sheta manja wa tenri yo sumba re. Yon chilo ni paan jebe yinna kui yiyeb teso namzi chilo ni yu dewa. Nono nje na mara wa tenri yungi wa ta desu sonji yung tenri wa.
Then also other than the Buddha's feet not actually touching the ground, then when the Buddha is wearing his Dharma robes, then it is said that the robes do not cling onto the Buddha's body. They sort of like float at the distance of like four finger widths away from the Buddha's body. Even though externally, when you look at the Buddha's body, this is not apparent. No one sees the shape of the Buddha's body being pronounced on the robes. Then the robes seem to pronounce the physical shape of the Buddha's body. However, internally it is said that the robes are floating at the width of four distance away from the Buddha's body. They do not actually touch the Buddha's body when he's wearing the robes.
Yes. Jake,
then in the the requesting prayers and lineage gurus, they recite the beginner prayers. Then there has this verse which says, whose body was formed by 10 million perfect virtues. So therefore, you know, one requires a lot of virtue, good karma, to be able to achieve the physical form of the Buddha's body. Then it is said that all the roots of virtue of all the arhats, the hearers, you know, are collected together. Then the only all these merits would be only sufficient to accomplish only one hair pore of the Buddha's body. And since the Buddha has a lot of the pores in his body, like there are said to be 21,000 pores. Therefore, one can imagine how much merit is required for that. And then 100 times of the such merit is required to accomplish one of the 80 minor exemplifications, and so altogether there are 80. So just to accomplish one requires 100 of 100 times the merit of that before. Then 100 times of the merit of that, you know, of creating of those minor exemplifications is required to accomplish one of the Buddha's major marks. So there are 32 major marks. So one can imagine that there's so one can understand that so much virtue or merit is required to achieve the physical form of the Buddha. So the 1,000 times the merit to achieve the rest of the 32 marks is required to accomplish the brow curl between the Buddha's forehead, Buddha's eyebrows, and then 100,000 times the merit of that is required to achieve the crown protrusion or the crown pinnacle of the Buddha on top of the Buddha's head. Yes. So 100,000 times of the merit to achieve that crown pinnacle is required to achieve the Dharma speech, the speech of the son of Dharma, you know, of the Buddha, the holy speech of the Buddha, which is like the melodious voice of Brahma. Yes.
Not like melodious of Brahma. That's wrong. This Tang Bei Yang, that's the perfect speech, perfect tune.
Yes.
Sounds perfect. Yes. Perfect of Brahma.
Sorry, the perfect melodious speech of the Buddha.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
So therefore, understanding that the Buddha in the past has accumulated a lot of roots of virtue in order to achieve such a holy form of the Buddha, and also the other qualities of the holy body, the holy speech, as well as the holy mind, and so forth. They remember all these qualities, then going for refuge to the Buddha, then one's refuge becomes extremely powerful. So to generate the strong mind by seeing the qualities of the objects of refuge, then generating the strong mind, a powerful mind of entrustment of oneself to the objects of refuge. So in this case, understanding, as mentioned yesterday, to think about the qualities, recollecting the sufferings of the lower realms, and then generating fear and dread, you know, in one's mind with regards to such sufferings, and then going for refuge to the objects, seeking refuge in the objects of refuge, going for refuge to the three jewels. And if one goes for refuge to three jewels, since they possess such qualities and power, as mentioned before, there is not, you know, the three jewels definitely have the capacity to protect us. So by going for refuge in such a way, one is able to do the practice perfectly. And also, by remembering the different qualities, by remembering the different qualities other than generating strong fear towards the suffering in the lower realms, remembering the qualities of the objects of refuge, the three jewels, then one is able to practice perfect refuge, and it becomes of great benefit to one's practice of refuge. Yes. So all the teachings that you heard today, please keep them in your mind and apply them to actual practice.